Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Billion Dollar Secret, 20 Principles of Billionaire Wealth and Success, by Raphael Batziag, with Jack Canfield. Foreword by Jack Canfield. Narrated by Graham Rowett. Foreword. When Raphael Batziag approached me 5 years ago with his idea to interview over 20 billionaires from all around the globe and get them to share the secrets of their success, I wasn't at all convinced he could pull it off. Think about it. How do you convince over 20 billionaires to take serious time out of their incredibly busy schedules to work together on a book project? Millionaires, maybe, but billionaires who are running large, multifaceted empires? I had been studying the principles and practices of successful people for more than 40 years, and I knew nobody had ever attempted that before. As I continued to meet and correspond with Raphael several times over that 5-year period, to my surprise, I discovered how doggedly he was committed to the project, and by applying the same principles and disciplines he was learning from the billionaires he was interviewing, he actually pulled it off. And he did it on a global scale. And he not only managed to get access to 21 billionaires, he convinced some of the very best billionaire entrepreneurs in the world to work with him. Since 2003, the most successful entrepreneurs from each country in the world have been coming together each year in Monaco to choose the World Entrepreneur of the Year, the person they believe to be the very best entrepreneur in the world that year. And since 2003, 8 of those 15 people named World Entrepreneur of the Year have been billionaires. And out of those 8, 5 chose to participate in this book and share their wisdom with Raphael. And now you, the reader. There is no other book available anywhere in the world that contains this much entrepreneurial experience, insight, and wisdom in it. From his countless hours of interviews with these highly accomplished billionaires, Raphael has managed to identify 20 powerful principles that led to their success, and that are now available to you to help you achieve your entrepreneurial and financial dreams. You are now about to intimately get to know and learn from 21 no-nonsense business heroes who started with nothing and have gone on to build hugely successful companies, as well as contribute greatly to their local and global communities through their extensive philanthropic activities. They are now available as true role models for anyone with a compelling vision and who is willing to work hard and work smart to make that vision a reality. As you will discover, Raphael has a unique gift in that he is able to get people who are mostly very private about their work and their wealth to open up their hearts and share their innermost thoughts and feelings about their journey to success. As you read this book, you are now the beneficiary of Raphael's gift as you gain true insider access to the beliefs and behaviors that are required to achieve greatness in the business world. And because of the way Raphael has organized the book, it feels like you are right in the same room with them. They share the challenges they faced, the lessons they learned, the disciplines they developed, the solutions they created and discovered, and the results they produced in everyday, easy-to-understand language. The end result is this astonishing book. You will find old ideas and misconceptions about billionaires being gently washed away. One of the most powerful things you'll discover is that these men did not start their careers by inheriting large sums of money that they were able to increase through a little bit of good luck. In fact, every one of the billionaires in this book is self-made. Some of them even came from extreme poverty and had seemingly hopeless beginnings, and you would have easily written them off if you'd met them in their youth. But they never gave up, and eventually achieved extraordinary things in business through their sheer, unbelievable tenacity. As you get to know these remarkable men from their more human side, beyond what you would normally read about such people in Forbes or Fortune magazine, you'll discover that they are basically just the same as you and me. But what sets them apart is that they have mastered the art of self-belief, and they came to realize that the only limitations any of us have are the ones we place upon ourselves. As you read their stories and come to understand their billionaire mindsets, you'll see that when these psychological limitations are removed, the potential to achieve anything you desire is truly limitless. You now have access to the inspiration, motivation, and information from 21 billionaires who will act as your mentors. And if you apply what they teach you with commitment, dedication, and perseverance, you'll find that your potential for greatness is as limitless as theirs. I'd normally end this book by saying, good luck, but it is not luck that you need. It is simply the resolve and the courage to put into practice the life-changing principles and tools you are about to discover in this book. So instead, I'll end by saying, enjoy the journey. Jack Canfield, number one New York Times best-selling author of The Success Principles, How to Get from Where You Are to Where You Want to Be, Dare to Win, The Power of Focus, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. How It Came About and What to Expect. If you can count your money, you don't have $1 billion. J. Paul Getty, the wealthiest man in the world in the 1950s. In 1908, when journalist Napoleon Hill was assigned an interview with Andrew Carnegie, the wealthiest man in the world at the time, he didn't imagine the journey that was awaiting him. Carnegie, himself an extremely successful entrepreneur, had the conviction that something resembling a success formula must exist, one that could be shaped into an infallible system that anybody could follow. Impressed by Hill's wit, Carnegie asked him if he was up to the task of formulating such a system by interviewing the most successful people in America and analyzing the results. Hill jumped on the opportunity. Carnegie gave him a letter of introduction to automotive magnate Harry Ford. The latter then introduced him to Alexander Graham Bell, inventor of the telephone, Elmer R. Gates, inventor of the fire extinguisher, Thomas Edison, inventor of the light bulb, and Luther Burbank, agricultural pioneer. Hill went on to interview these individuals and many others who were among the wealthiest and most successful people of his time. After 20 years of research, he published his Philosophy of Achievement as a formula for rags-to-riches success in his monumental work, The Law of Success. He condensed this knowledge into his famous work, Think and Grow Rich, which went on to become one of the best-selling books of all time and continues to sell in multiple versions and formats. Hill's publication was the seminal event in establishing a universal success philosophy. In the last 100 years, Hill's philosophy has come to dominate the Western, or shall we say distinctly American, school of thought on this subject. All of the figures referenced in Think and Grow Rich were American, after all. How it all started. 5 years ago, I was attending a success conference. Thousands of people were high-fiving each other and shouting enthusiastically, "You've got a millionaire mind!" I went there inspired by the success books I had read, books on millionaire thinking, including Hill's book. But I somehow felt awkward. Something didn't feel right. Didn't let me cheer with others. There was something strange in the air, a feeling, a perception that I couldn't grasp. Then it struck me. Of course. Of course I've got a millionaire mind. Back in the 1990s, I was pioneering e-commerce in Europe. I created the first fully functional online shop selling bikes in the German-speaking market. Having built a multi-million dollar company, I am a millionaire myself. So what? I don't feel like an overly successful entrepreneur with it. Others have developed their businesses faster, grew bigger with seemingly less effort. On top of that, my business felt like a continuous uphill battle. Being just a millionaire is rather a mediocre performance in the world of business. I'd rather have a billionaire mind. That would be something desirable for every entrepreneur. But this I apparently can't learn here, at this conference, from people struggling to reach their first million. I left disillusioned and determined to find a way to learn it. Have you ever asked yourself, why is it that despite all your hustle every day, you aren't where you want to be in life? How is it possible that some people during one lifespan manage to build organizations of hundreds of thousands of people and create the amount of value that an average person would need hundreds of thousands of years to create? What is their secret? Is it just a question of lucky circumstances? Is it their environment? Maybe it is their education. Or does the secret lie in their personalities? What are the keys to their phenomenal success? What do their belief systems consist of? How did they get where they are today, and how can you embark on the same journey to success? What are the mindsets and success rituals that these influential people have used to create such massive wealth? What drives them? What is the source of their exceptional motivation? What gives them the energy to relentlessly pursue such outrageous goals? What is it in the personalities of self-made billionaires that made them achieve so much more than an average entrepreneur and become so extremely successful in business? This book, The Billion Dollar Secret, is the result of a 5-year journey that took me several times around the globe to find the answers to these questions. It revives the 100-year-old idea of Napoleon Hill. However, I have taken the research one step further by interviewing some of today's most successful business personalities, all of them self-made billionaires. This time, in contrast to Napoleon Hill's work, I approached it globally, talking not only to American business giants, but also to self-made billionaires from all parts of the world, representing different nations, cultures, and religions, as well as people from various industries, social backgrounds, and age groups. Today, we live in a globalized society. Asia now has a greater population of wealthy people than Europe and North America. Various cultures, religions, and mindsets around the world have developed their own paths to wealth. The personalities of the self-made billionaires in this book are all quite different. They have their own areas of brilliance, their own unique personal interests, and their own individual quirks. In spite of these differences, however, there are specific common denominators, a set of personality principles shared by all of them that contributed to their successes and pushed them way over the top. It distinguishes them from everyone else. These principles aren't inborn. They can be learned, trained, and internalized. I call this set of principles the billion-dollar secret. It is one thing to analyze public appearances or to cull third-party materials and draw conclusions from them, as most authors have done in the past. It is an entirely different thing to ask the superachiever face-to-face about his or her methodology of success, motivation, and way of thinking, as I have done here. First-hand data allows a genuine inner view into the heads of these outstanding personalities, access to their true thoughts and emotions, and original insights into their understanding of business and the world. This book is the first attempt to extract the success principles directly from the world's most successful self-made billionaire entrepreneurs themselves. What is a billionaire? The definition of a billionaire won't be a revelation to you. He or she is a person with a net worth of at least $1 billion. What you may not realize is that a billionaire is an extremely scarce creature. Statistically, only one out of every 5 million citizens in the world, or one in 10,000 millionaires, is a billionaire. It is difficult for most people to imagine how much money $1 billion really is. You would need about 22,000 pounds of $100 bills to amass $1 billion. All 21 individuals interviewed for this book created a multiple of that value in their lifetimes. They did not inherit their great wealth or luck into it through some other means. They earned their fortunes through painstaking work and had to overcome steep trials and tribulations to reach their current status. I must clarify the most common misconception regarding billionaires. They don't sit on mountains of money. Nobody has $1 billion in cash. Seldom do these people have billions of dollars sitting in their personal bank accounts either. When they do, this is only for a limited time between transactions. Rather, almost all of their money is invested in companies, stock, and/or real estate. It would be irresponsible to have so much cash lying around. The money would be eaten up by inflation, and there's also always the risk of a bank going bankrupt. Artist Michael Markovici created a work of art, $1 billion, which physically depicted $1 billion in printed money. When the piece was exhibited in Vienna, Austria, Markovici was asked why he didn't use real money. His answer? Nobody could afford the ticket. Even if he borrowed it at only 1% a year interest from a bank, it would cost around $200,000 to have that real money used in a one-week exposition. An entrepreneur or investor usually wants to see profit from his money, say 5%. In this case, keeping $1 billion in cash around the house would mean $135,000 opportunity cost each and every day. This is more than most people earn in a year. Few people do this voluntarily. Many people fail to see the difference between a millionaire and a billionaire. In reality, the differences are gargantuan. Consider the following examples from several interviewees in this book. An average millionaire may own a hotel. Norwegian billionaire Petter Stordalen owns a chain of almost 200 hotels. A wealthy multimillionaire may own a factory. Canadian billionaire Frank Stronach owns 400 of them. A millionaire may own a restaurant, or possibly even several. Jack Cowan, an Australian billionaire, has interests in 3,000 restaurants. The run-of-the-mill millionaire may own a supermarket or two. Russian billionaire Sergei Galitsky owns over 17,000 supermarkets and drugstores. Maybe this anecdote will make the difference between a millionaire and a billionaire more tangible for you. Recently, a friend told me he was making $500,000 profit a year. Pretty impressive earnings for most people. He has been making this amount of money for several years already and investing it. His net worth is several million dollars. By all means, he is a millionaire. But what I realized is that in order for him to amass $1 billion, he would have needed to be born before Jesus Christ and would have needed to save every penny, not pay taxes, and then only if there were no inflation. Compared to that, billionaires create a fortune of $1 billion and more in just one lifespan. The gap between millionaires and billionaires is colossal, not only with respect to their wealth, but also in terms of the power and impact they have. Billionaires literally change the world. The $1 billion secret explains what distinguishes the billionaire thought process from everyone else's and answers these questions. Why do some successful people who become millionaires remain at this level, whereas others become billionaires and change the world? What makes the latter achieve so much more? No matter what endeavor you are attempting, you should always learn from the world's best. Why? Because whether you learn from a third-league player or a world champion, the amount of time and effort you put in would be exactly the same. However, your results would be completely different. If your desire is to be the world's best soccer player, for example, you won't get there by teaching yourself or by learning from a local hero, no matter how talented and experienced he or she might be. But if you were to get advice from past and present all-time greats, such as Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo, Pele, and Mia Hamm, you would gain instant insights, both mental and physical, that would give you the best chance possible to achieve all-time greatness at the sport. Likewise, if you seek to become successful in business, you need to learn from the world's best entrepreneurs. Yet how do you even determine who these individuals are? There is one objective measure of business success: net worth. This is the universal score for business performance. Success might mean different things to different people, but in business, it is relatively easy to determine the world's most successful entrepreneurs. These are the people who have created the most dollar value during their business careers, the highest net worth. By definition, the world's best entrepreneurs are the wealthiest people in the world. Concretely, this means billionaires, with emphasis on the capital B. For the truly ambitious entrepreneur, it is senseless to consult with average millionaires or multimillionaires. In today's business world, these business people are far removed from consideration as the best performers. In the United States, one in every 20 entrepreneurs is a millionaire. So don't learn from the millionaires. No, you need to learn from the best, from the billionaires. Among other billionaires, the following top business personalities shared their wisdom for this book. Manny Stuhl, the World Entrepreneur of the Year 2016. Mohed Altrad, the World Entrepreneur of the Year 2015. Cho Tak Wong, Xiao Duong, the World Entrepreneur of the Year 2009. Tony Tan Kak Tiong, the World Entrepreneur of the Year 2004. N.R. Narayana Murthy, the World Entrepreneur of the Year 2003. As you read this book, you may be wondering how I managed to gain access to all these illustrious personalities and convince them to participate in this global book project. Well, that story would fill another book, which I may someday write. Suffice it to say, this project took me around the world several times and let me see behind walls that are normally inaccessible to outsiders. Last but not least, it allowed me to meet the most extraordinary business personalities of our times, all for the purpose of sharing their innermost wisdom with you, dear reader. Yet this is not a book about them, the shining diamonds of our business world, the mavericks, the 1 in 5 million ones, the black swans, per se. It is about the secret of their phenomenal success, told directly by them in their words. It is about the $1 billion secret. This book provides you with a roadmap so you may embark on your journey toward achieving similar results in your life and business. Let's begin. Chapter 1. It's Inside You. Convictions are more dangerous foes of truth than lies. Friedrich Nietzsche. It is astonishing to consider how deeply public opinion about billionaires is dominated by stereotypes. The average person knows little about their reality, A world that represents a mere 0.00002% of society. This knowledge deficiency is distorted by the media, which focuses on flashy images and dramatic incidents to create and promulgate envious sentiments. The picture painted by the media and accepted as fact by the general public is heavily skewed and a far cry from reality, at least insofar as self-made billionaires are concerned. Let's start by refuting some of the most common misconceptions. The following will give you a taste of the kind of people we are talking about and introduce you to their world. Billionaire misconception. Billionaires are born in rich, developed countries. If you think it is necessary for a person to be born in a rich, developed country in order to become a billionaire, you are mistaken. The story of Narayana Murthy provides a good example. N.R. Narayana Murthy was born in 1946 in India, one of the poorest countries in the world. Narayana's family didn't have furniture. Everybody sat and slept on the floor. His father advised him to choose his hobbies carefully and select ones that wouldn't drain his meager budget. Reading, listening to music, and talking to friends became his hobbies of choice. He couldn't afford to buy a newspaper, so he would go to the public library and read a copy there. In the early 1980s, India not only was one of the poorest countries in the world, it was also one of the countries most hostile to free enterprise. India had a socialist government that had developed an array of restrictions and ridiculous regulations that made it almost impossible to conduct business. This led to extreme corruption. Government officials had the power to decide which enterprises would succeed and which ones would fail. As a result, India's economy was strangled. In 1981, when Narayana Murthy, together with several partners, founded the software company Infosys, the problems they encountered seemed insurmountable. The country's frequent power shortages were one of the lesser obstacles they eventually would face. Consider this. Do you think it is possible to run a software company without a computer? Well, Infosys didn't have one. Why? Because a license was needed from the government in order to import a computer to India. Narayana Murthy told me he had to endure 3 years and 50 visits to Delhi to obtain that license. The time frame barely hints at what was involved in this endeavor. Infosys was located in Bangalore, and Delhi was some 1,500 miles away. To put this in perspective, it's 200 miles more than the distance between New York City to Miami, Florida. Narayana couldn't afford to fly, so he needed to travel by train 2 days each way. As mentioned, the bureaucracy required 50 visits to Delhi. If you do the math, that is the equivalent of 200 days in total travel time in a 3-year period. Now you are probably asking yourself, during the 3 years they didn't have a computer, how was it possible for them to run a software company? How did they program? The team found a customer in America who was amenable to allowing them to program on his computer. 6 of the co-founders traveled to the United States to work on this, while Narayana remained in India in order to clear up the formalities and obtain approval to import their own computer. Communication was yet another problem. Narayana informed me that it took the average Indian company 5 to 7 years to get a phone line. Aside from the technological backwardness, the reason for the long wait was that retired government officials were prioritized to get phone lines. The obvious question here? How did he communicate with his co-founders and customers in the United States without a telephone, and in the days before email? Narayana made regular visits to the post office, where he used a public phone box to call them. I asked Narayana what happened if they needed to contact him. He smiled at me and replied, "Well, they couldn't. They just couldn't." After a year of struggling, they finally had a phone line installed. But having a phone line didn't necessarily mean they could also get connections, especially with the United States. Most of the time, there was no signal on the line. When there was a signal, it was usually busy. As previously mentioned, it took 3 years for them to obtain a license to import the computer. Yet having a license didn't mean they could afford a computer. Complicating matters further was the fact that the software they were creating required a mini-computer, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, money the founders just didn't have. Infosys was founded with $250, saved up by 7 founders. Narayana Murthy faced another problem and performed another miracle, which we will discuss later. After the computer was imported and installed, the 6 co-founders returned to India to work on it. But that still wasn't the end of the bureaucratic obstacles they had to overcome. They now had to figure out how to get the code they produced to the customer in the United States. This occurred pre-internet, so it wasn't as if they could simply email the code to the customer. The only way to do it back then was to save the program on magnetic tape and send it via the traditional mail service. On the other side, the customer loaded it from the magnetic tape to his computer. Unfortunately, this solution didn't work between India and the United States. Why not? Because any package being shipped from India to the United States needed to go through Indian customs. It took customs officials about 2 weeks to perform the customs procedure. This meant that it took 3 weeks for the code to be shipped from Infosys in India to the customer in the States. With every change Infosys made to the program, they needed to wait another 3 weeks before they could receive any feedback from their client. The consequence was that project durations extended to what seemed like an eternity. This process was unacceptable and akin to an entrepreneurial harakiri. They needed to shorten the shipment time considerably to speed up their production cycles. How did they solve this? The team came up with the idea of printing out the code on paper and faxing it to the United States, where, on the other side, another Infosys employee typed it manually from the fax into the customer's computer. Of course, this required additional manual work and wasn't error-free, but it dramatically increased the speed of their software shipments. That was not all when it came to challenges. Imagine the conditions they had to work in and the obstacles they needed to overcome while building their company in this poor developing country. I had a first-hand taste of these conditions when conducting the interview with Narayanamurthy. At that time, it was 45 degrees Celsius, 113 Fahrenheit, in Delhi. This kind of temperature isn't exactly conducive to performing physical or intellectual tasks, but people in India must perform their work in these conditions on a regular basis. Today, Infosys is considered one of the wealthiest and most developed companies in India, offering the best working conditions available for their employees. And, of course, there was air conditioning at the Infosys guest house in Delhi, where we conducted the interview. Even so, there was a power outage during the meeting, and the air conditioning system went out. Our own attempts to switch it back on failed, and the temperature rapidly became uncomfortable. Narayana called a maintenance team. After 10 minutes of fumbling, it finally clicked on. 5 minutes later, there was another power outage, and the air conditioning once again went out. We decided to leave it alone, because we didn't want to lose any more time. I had only a tiny glimpse of what working life is like in modern-day India. For those readers who have never had such an opportunity, can you imagine what it may have looked like to work in that environment 30 years ago, when India and Infosys were far less developed? Today, Narayanamurthy is a billionaire. Infosys is the largest software company in the world, employing 200,000 programmers. This is more than Microsoft, Apple, and Google combined. In 2003, Narayanamurthy was named World Entrepreneur of the Year, the best entrepreneur in the world, if you will. It is therefore a myth that only people born in rich, developed countries can become billionaires. In fact, not only has Narayana himself become a billionaire, but he also made 6 of his co-founders into billionaires and at least 4,000 of his employees into millionaires. What most people fail to realize is that wealth in developing countries grows much faster than in industrialized countries. In 2016, the number of billionaires in Asia surpassed the total in all of North America. In my research, I stumbled upon the phenomenon of immigrant billionaires. Yes, a strikingly high percentage of self-made billionaires made it big outside their countries of origin. They came from poor or war-torn countries with nothing in their hands, yet found ways to build great wealth. We will discuss this in greater detail later in the book. Billionaire misconception. Billionaires come from well-off, supportive families. If you think a person must be born into a wealthy, supportive family to have a chance at becoming a billionaire, you are likely unaware of the story of Mohed Altrad. Mohed Altrad was born a nomad in the Syrian desert. His Bedouin tribe lived in tents. They set up camp where they found water for the animals and stayed there as long as the vegetation was enough to sustain their herds. Then they folded the tents and moved farther in search of better pastures. When Mohed was born, his father disowned him. He expelled Mohed and his mother from their home and slaughtered his brother to death. Mohed was forced to live with his mother on the periphery of the tribe, his life so unimportant that nobody even noted the day or year of his birth. Even today, he doesn't know when he was born. He told me that the dates he uses now were invented because his children wanted to celebrate his birth.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?